Last year was definitely a busy year. There's actually a fourth project that's yet to come out that was kind of a songwriting collective where we had this songwriting retreat with a bunch of folks. Some of them you may have heard of, some may not. Amber Rubarth, Joey Ryan from the Milk Carton Kids, Vienna Tang, Adam Levy. Adam Levy, actually, if you're a Tracy Chapman fan, the top of the tune, Give Me One Reason, is Adam Levy. So it was kind of a really cool, talented group of characters, and we all got together in the beginning of 2010, and we spent a week writing songs, and we recorded those. Now, those songs haven't come out yet. Everything else has. So yeah, it was a busy year. And oddly enough, it didn't feel like a year where I was being wildly prolific. It was just a matter of kind of tidying up loose ends. All of those projects had been things that the original seeds had been planted years before, and they kind of just came to fruition last year. And it was good because at the time I was feeling like I was kind of closing up a chapter of my solo work of the music that I started on a record called The Things You Think You Need. And the kind of the second chapter of that is this record that came out this year called Diamonds and Blood. And I'd written a few songs for that, but it was really cool. Like, co-writing, it can be a really great way to kind of break open the floodgates and kind of get into new sonic territory and get yourself out of, as an artist, I think sometimes you fall into, it's easy to fall into not a rut, but you get used to doing things comfortably. And when you get outside your comfort zone, interesting things happen.
I think those of us who aren't songwriters still get an idea of someone who is a songwriter. If you're writing a song by yourself, you imagine the songwriter with their instrument or a notepad, pen, an individual sort of task. When you collaborate, when you write a song with someone else, how does that work for you? What are the logistics?
Well, like writing a song on your own, where it can happen any different way. You know, sometimes you're sitting in traffic, you think of something, before the advent of iPhones, I would leave myself messages with song ideas. I would write it down on the back of a receipt, something like that. Co-writing is a little bit more organized, but it can take shape from, it might stem from, hey, man, I got this melody. What is it?
And this is face-to-face?
Yeah, face-to-face.
You're in the same room.
So you might take a melody, and I might show it to you and say, does this inspire any kind of lyric in your mind, any kind of imagery, or it might be the other way. It might be like, I had this idea or this happened to me. And songwriting obviously is in the spirit of collaboration. And it's almost like you take two individual songwriters, and those two songwriters have two individual personalities. But a third personality typically emerges when two songwriters get together, and that's a cool thing. It's not necessary. Occasionally, you're co-writing, I'm going to write for your voice, or you're going to help me write for my voice. But in my experience, it's almost like finding something new. And a lot of the writers that I've worked with last year are all fairly established and typically write most of their own material. It was kind of in the interest of finding, new territory.
As you mentioned, the new CD is Diamonds and Blood. Mm-hmm. There's a song on there that I've been listening to over and over.
Oh, let me smack it.
And that's River Prayer.
Oh, cool.
That is a gorgeous song.
Well, thank you so much. It's interesting that's the song that you gravitated to, because I think that's maybe one of the more obscure tracks. It definitely has a strong but maybe more diminutive legion of fans, that song. But I wrote that one actually a few years ago. I put on a concert in my hometown every year called Rock for the River. It's a benefit concert, and actually a guy from around here who grew up around here, a guy named Joe Purdy, he's been doing that concert with me since the very first one. But that song emerged. Actually, I wrote it. We usually gather up. There's usually eight or nine performers, and everybody stays at my folks' place up there in the Thousand Islands, just way up in northern New York. And everybody congregates a couple of days before the concert, and we get together and we play music for a couple of days and kind of put a show together. And I remember it was like two or three of the my friends and musicians that were on their way in, they left New York City a little bit late and they got stuck in the 4th of July traffic. So they were like not going to make it until like 7 o'clock in the morning. And like I was like kind of behaving like a den mother, just kind of waiting up for them. And as I was up all night waiting up for them, I just kind of wrote this little tune that's about this place where I grew up. And when I say I grew up, it's really where I really learned about love and life and death and had some of my most powerful experiences there, and just have this constant of this this body of water that almost seems to have a soul in and of itself.
You grew up there. You've lived in L.A. Now you're in Vermont.
Yeah.
Well, that's a boomerang there.
Yeah. When people ask me where I'm from now, I have to take a deep breath. I grew up in upstate New York, and I went to college in Vermont, and so I did spend some time there and get attached to it. And then I went, I graduated from school, and I went down to New York for a year and kind of got things, my music career kind of started in earnest there, and then got distracted by being a ski bum in Jackson Hole for a little bit. And then,
not the first.
Yeah. And then I ended up in L.A. I was with the intent of really just being there for a couple weeks, but stayed for 9 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm all over the place.
Whenever I see a list that you've put together of your influences, both people and people that other people might know, like Bob Dylan or mm-hmm. the Grateful Dead, one that doesn't show up, and I wonder if you're familiar with this artist, because Labor Day Blues, the mm-hmm. first time I heard it, reminded me of Peter Case.
Oh, yeah.
It was in the band The Plimsolls, and is a great singer-songwriter.
I need to dig deeper into his material, because I'm not. I mean, I see his name on 50 to 80% of the venues that I play, mm-hmm. And I know I've heard from so many people that he's great, but there's so many great songwriters out there.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool. I'll have to check him out.
Yeah, and that's a very high compliment. Peter Case is great. Your CDs, like Diamonds and Blood, are on your label. It's you.
Yeah.
You control everything.
That's the advantage is, you get to make all the decisions. You don't have to kind of compromise your art to make whoever's bankrolling the project happy, which can be an incredibly frustrating and heartbreaking experience. The downside is that occasionally you have to ask questions like, oh, well, you have all these records out. How come you're not more famous? And I read a great quote today. Bob Dylan said, he's like, I've learned that privacy can be sold, but the thing is you can never buy it back. Mm-hmm. And there's great truth to that. And one of the major advantages is I can live in relative anonymity, making the records that I want to make and having a career in music and feed my family and without having to compromise all these things, and without, instead of, selling a million records and getting 1% of that, I'll sell 10,000 records and get 100% of that. And it works out to be a pretty similar income, So it's the way that I've kind of done it from the beginning. And every time I had an opportunity to compromise, to maybe join forces with a greater, greater entity, I kind of found it hard to compromise. So
right.
So
greater mean bigger.
When I say greater entity, I mean like a big,
yeah,
like record label. Or,
right.
That's my explanation.
I like it. Well, do you mind playing something?
Sure, yeah. I didn't arrive with a set list, but maybe I'll play that song, Labor Day Blues, because mentioned it. And that might be a good one for me to play, given that I've just stepped off an airplane and my vocal cords are probably all dried out. My birthday came
52 legs. My old man kicked that sheet fade. He was wrapped in pride, never want to wait. But another night, another song, pour me one, it's been too long. Let's stay, talk a while about the past. Ain't it just bittersweet how the river rolls? The services were short and sweet, beautiful but incomplete. The faces in the crowd seemed so at peace. Oh, I didn't think I'd see her there. Didn't occur to me she would care. She was standing in the stained glass sun just crying. She's here today, but she'll be gone tomorrow. It's how the river rolls. I'm up all night writing songs, doing my best to get along. But sometimes you are safer when you're wrong. And I swear I did my best that day. I tried so hard to pull away. Nobody wants to hear you when you're down. It's relentless how the river rolls. Said he was late, not chewing, that lonesome wind crept up again. I'd pray for it to stop, and it began. And the rain came down like a hurricane. In my head was just the same. I remembered all the nights I spent alone. And I found cold comfort in how the river rolls. Who grindstone girls do it best set soon. She said it like I already knew. Yes, I said, you know I've loved a few. And then she grabs me by my hand, leads me through that cool white sand. And we stare for a while at the moon. So damn beautiful how the river rolls. So damn beautiful how the river rolls.
That's fantastic. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. My pleasure. My pleasure.
JNash.com is the place to find all sorts of information.
Yes.
And you, all the music I think we've talked about, and even more, available at iTunes.
Correct.
The latest CD is Diamonds and Blood. Jay, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been